And you are listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9. In a few moments, we're going to be talking with John Morrow, City Manager of Port Townsend. But after that, 1 o'clock, Turk Tucker is going to come in with his show, irregular show. In this case, sitting in for Dick Keenan. Maybe he'll be sitting in for Dick Keenan for a while. Often you hear Tucker on Monday mornings, one of the fine shows of music. I'm trying to remember in my mind what he calls his show. If I look at this piece of paper, maybe it will tell me that he was, Vinyl Dialogues. That is Dick Keenan's title. So Tucker will probably have his own take on things. KPTZ is a listener-supported radio station. No commercials here. We depend upon you to support us here on KPTZ. You can become a sustaining member or a one-time donor by going to kptz.org. I think it's time to say hello to John Morrow.
Hello.
John.
Good to see you, Phil.
We have faces. You and I have faces.
It's true. One would hope.
Well,
I think I might have just bit a portion of my off trying to scarf down my lunch before, and I missed.
you missed your lunch. Well, that is not good news. I don't see any. Now your napkin did good work.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk about the city of Port Townsend. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Jefferson County. The first thing I wanted to talk about today with you is, I guess, in recognition of two consecutive days of fairly heavy rain. And the rain gods finally have remembered that we are here in the northwest corner of the continent, and we like rain like everyone else. But I've not, despite the fact that it's been rather a warm summer and somewhat dry, although not greatly drier than usual, I haven't heard any concern on the city's part about the city water supply, any need to conserve, don't water your lawn, that sort of thing. How is the water supply looking?
Well, I would suggest you don't water your lawn today, just because for obvious reasons, it is plentiful out there. And water's been on my mind here, too. Look, this is something because of a couple factors over the summer. We're always tracking and top marks to Ian Jablonski, our water manager, who is always thinking about this. We were lucky this year that we started off with a snowpack that was about 38% above average. And it melted off kind of about a week and a half later than it was supposed to usually. So that put us in a good position. But is it too long ago to remember that heat dome that parked itself out here and just rapidly warmed things up, beyond anything we've ever seen before? And at that moment, we were very interested in our stream flows. And so, they went from, we were well ahead to they started, coming down pretty quickly. But despite some rapid melt, we never got into the situation where we were going to advise water conservation due to drought. I think it's safe to say when you look up or even if you just walk outside, you can get a sense that we probably don't need to be thinking about that now. Although obviously conserving water is always a good idea. So we don't have a problem this year. Here are the rains. We are plentiful in the water supply.
So John, I know that many municipal utilities, water utilities, are looking towards the effects of climate change. Yeah. And at one point, maybe there was a debate about whether climate change is, quote, real. I don't think among water utilities, among people who have to prepare for what the future will be, I don't think there's any question. What is Port Townsend doing? Does it follow any particular models in order to determine what it needs to do to enhance its water supply? What's the thinking in Port Townsend about water supply?
Yeah, that's a great question, because obviously we're used to droughts because the Northwest kind of goes into seasonal drought conditions every summer. But with climate change, it's kind of all bets are off on what normal is. And there's no longer any doubt that this is a real thing and we're feeling the effects now. That's a debate that probably it's 20 years old or and put to bed. We should probably take most of our thinking power and think about how we're going to deal with the impacts that we're feeling already and that we will increasingly feel, as well as how to drive down emissions. So it's no different with the water supply. This is a conversation we have looking for literally only a few months ago, working with the mill to look for grant, for instance, to look at emergency drought provision, you know, thinking about what our water supply will need, not in years like this year, which seem to be okay, but in the year where we get 38% below normal snowpack or unusually high temperatures, or if the fall rains don't come. I think last year, September was relatively dry, and here we are quite clearly into the autumn. But, you know, this is something in the planning, in our capital planning, that we're considering, as well as projecting out use. And so it's an active conversation with the mill, because the mill uses quite a lot of water, and getting a handle on what their future use will be, which we are told will be the same or less. So they're not expecting any growth. As a city, I'm hoping we're on that path too. I think across a lot of municipalities, we'll see increasing population, but decreasing per capita water use. And that's a good trend to go into, you know, the conversation around climate and drought. But that's not where it stops. We need to think about our capital planning and the conversation we're having right now with the mill about the water use agreement, which is something we're discussing with them again today.
Okay, John, we've often heard the expression, may they rest in peace. Hmm. Well, those trying to rest in peace in the Redmond Cemetery and the county cemetery next door, yeah, are not resting in peace. They're resting in turmoil, and I'm rather thinking they're not enjoying that.
Yeah.
Briefly, can you explain the details of what's gone on there before I ask you any more questions about it?
Oh, I mean, we did talk about this, Tim and I, last week, I believe, and it just seems to be, you know, right now it's a code compliance issue that we're processing for, you know, permits that were not granted for felling of trees. And so you can read about it in the Leader, but obviously unfortunate on many fronts, and, you know, one might say disturbing. So curious, Phil, where you're thinking on this one.
Well, what I'm thinking in part is, had the, I will say, the contractor or the landowner, one or the other, whoever the landowner really is, it's apparently difficult to say, but let's say the contractor then, had the contractor applied for a clearing and grading permit, which I think is the proper one, would that permit have been granted, and would the work that has been done been legal?
I can't say whether it would be granted, because there was no application. So, you know, I don't know to what extent there would be conditions. So I can't really comment on whether that would be granted. My suspicion, however, is that the behavior that we've seen and has been reported locally is not something that, you know, any reasonable person would be considered appropriate. So, you know, I can't, you know, forecast what kind of permits we would grant under different conditions. But suffice to say, going through that process, there's a reason why we ask people to apply for permits, so that there are some limitations on improper behavior, cutting, etc.
Is the county the county cemetery is a designated historic cemetery? Is the Redmond Cemetery also? Do you know that?
I believe so, but I actually don't know the answer to that.
So thanks to Shelley Levins, appropriate that someone from the Historical Society would observe something occurring in a cemetery or a pair of cemeteries. And Shelley is a friend of mine as well as of KPTZ's. She's out there and being a historian in a way maybe that she never had thought she would need to be. My question related to not Shelley in person, but she and maybe some others complained to the city about what was going on. Could the city have intervened without there being citizen complaints, or are citizen complaints required?
You know, obviously we have eyes on the city in all different respects, including, you know, from a public safety or from a permitting and co-compliance approach, you know, and some of that is proactive, but I would say, so yes, I mean, we keep our eyes open. I think, you know, there's only, you know, barely 100 eyes actually, and some of them are looking at other things. So I think we rely on our residents to come to us with concerns. And in fact, you could do that right on our website, cityofpt.us, right on the, actually, you don't have to, no slashes needed. You can go right on the website and there's a report of concern on the homepage. That could be something, everything from a dead deer to overflowing water issue to these code compliance issues. So I'd request that people, if you see something that looks inappropriate, illegal, or is disturbing, that please report that to us.
And you have a code compliance officer who would probably be the first to reply to somebody's inquiry.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we luckily do. We had that position vacant for some time, and now we have a code compliance officer, and that's been a pleasure. There's lots of work on that plate.
Yeah, and this particular project in particular, as we all move forward, there's at least three jurisdictions involved: the city, yeah, you, the county, because of the county cemetery, and quite possibly the state of Washington. Who is the lead agency here?
You know, Phil, I'm not going to be able to answer who the lead agency is. I know that we're working for on the code compliance in the city jurisdiction point of view, but I wasn't prepared to come with full detail about the issue.
That's all right. Well, are you ready? I know what you're perhaps assistant. I don't know who Tim Hodge is, but he sent me an email with a list of things you'd like to talk about, and you're probably
no. Let me just call, let me just kind of course correct here. So Phil, I know we Tim and I usually have more of a bit of a dialogue here. I'm happy to just do the gotcha questions if you'd like, but I think it's probably more productive to get in a bit of dialogue and you feel free to reflect your thoughts. Tim is not my assistant. I don't have an assistant.
Oh.
Tim is came with some questions that he wanted to raise, and it looks like more like comments. So I could tick through those. I think some graffiti issues on the recyclery building, some shoes hanging on a wire above the skate park, person living at Gateway Park, overhead wires removed. Those are the kinds of things, again, I would say to Mr. Hodge, if there are things you're observing that need some attention, I'm happy to at least note them in this broadcast, but you can report those to the city. So I could log those for you so that, the appropriate person, whether it be, from our planning team or public works or whatever, can actually get to those items if they need action.
Well, John, actually, those then I didn't realize. I thought they came. I was a little surprised at them actually, and thought they came from you, because I had no other way to know that they came from a listener. And in that sense, I guess we're glad that listeners are participating in our conversation, even though he took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Well, then what I have here is the Poplar Corridor.
Ah, yes.
Want to talk about that?
Sure. I mean, we've covered it the last couple of weeks, but we keep seeing these words like controversial in the paper. I guess I don't want to sound unsympathetic. I mean, obviously, when I come into town, that gateway means something, especially this time of year. It's beautiful. Those are iconic trees. And I would like to say to anybody listening who has raised concerns or opinions of any kind, including some calls and emails I've received, thank you for caring, irrespective of what your position is. This is a project that is emerging initially because of a safety hazard that was raised by the PUD. So I just want to be clear. This is a multi-agency, a partnership that's emerging here between the PUD, the Port of Port Townsend, and the city. There haven't been decisions except to apply for a grant so that we can defray some of the costs for things like undergrounding the mainline power line, which is not a city responsibility. That's a PUD, but that's something that they would offer to do for expansion of the boatyard, which again is not us, it's the port, and it's an opportunity that lines up nicely with our comprehensive plan. Seems to be in the best interest of marine trades and of the port itself because it's so busy. And of course, the gateway of tree planting, which some of that would fall on the city because, we're not proposing at all to remove trees and leave it vacant of trees. That would be quite an insult, I think, to what it means to come into Port Townsend on that gateway. So, this project, I think, requires a couple things because I've gotten a lot of feedback about this and some misinformation about what it is and why, how much it costs, et cetera. The leader's done some reporting here, which helps. But to me, it's clear that we need to find a way for people to, constructively voice concerns and ideas. This isn't just a city project, and it's also not something that will just immediately happen. But we're trying to line up and be clever about how we pull funding in so that, that isn't on the backs of the agencies alone. So I'm going to signal that in the next month or so, I'd like to get whether it's on KPTZ, so sorry to cold call you there, Phil, but whether it's a broadcast, virtual town hall or something, I think it'd be really productive to get people together from all agencies, from different perspectives on this, so we can at least share a common understanding of what the issue is, what the proposal might be, and how we work through some of the loss, the sense of loss of those trees, if that is indeed something that's going to happen, and then what next and what the vision should be.
So the role of the city in this, by the way, I would, as just a KPTZ volunteer, I would support the effort that you just described, and I'd even help with it if somebody invited me to. I think it's a grand idea. We might consider taking either telephone calls or emails and taking some time with it, because indeed, that corridor, it's old and it's dearer to a lot of people. The city's responsibility here, I'm gathering, is permits. There would be various permits needed, and I'm sure that the port and the PUD would know to apply for the permit, so there wouldn't be an issue there. And the other is landscaping.
So that's right. So, I mean, some of these trees are, you know, in on port property, and so it's kind of a nice coincidence that there's overlapping jurisdictions, and no coincidence that as agencies, I think we get along very, very well, and so we like an opportunity to work together. But I think, you know, we tend to be the steward of the public process, and I think that's a hefty responsibility and one we take seriously. But we cannot control necessarily the underground power lines or the boatyard. So I think getting all agencies to the table with public and maybe decision makers too, some of the commissioners or council members, could be a productive way of talking about how we all move forward. The other thing on the city for replanting, I mean, we've taken this to our Parks, Recreation, Tree and Trails Advisory Board. Because, you know, if you go back to 93, you know, there's a gateway plan that actually talks about these poplars, and there's a long history here. And I recognize there are a lot of people in the community that have deep personal history to those very trees, or those that came before. So, you know, we want to recognize that history and those strong feelings, as well as be very clear, you know, we possibly can do better there. You know, Lombardy poplars they grow fast, and that's fantastic. They're not exceptionally great for wildlife. They start to fall apart about now in terms of a 50 or 60 year old tree, which poses problems not just for electric lines, but also for general safety. So, you know, it's my hope that we can take some of the community intelligence and, you know, our expert advisory board, and come up with a better tree species selection, and think about how that canopy could look, you know, for the next 100 years, and make an investment now that, you know, we're not going to be coming back to in 40 or 50 years and saying, oh gosh, what next? I think we could probably do better.
And Forrest Schomer, who's local fellow for a very long while, well-regarded, certainly well-noted in the plant community, has recommended shore pines, I believe. So they don't get too big, and they are drought resistant, and they last a long while. The issue here comes down to leadership, really. Sometimes a leader has to lead, and I think the city's probably going to be, at least in terms of the public's consciousness, the lead agency here. The city is going to have to lead, and sometimes one has to lead in directions that are unpopular. You know that very well, and your councilors know that very well, but that is part of government, is leading when sometimes the direction you're taking has at least some opposition and maybe a great deal of opposition. How do you manage?
Oh, I mean, look, that's what we signed up for, right? So I don't think there's any, you won't get any complaints from me. And you know, I'm used to taking some heat and some flack, but I guess, you know, sometimes the right thing for a community is not the right thing for a particularly vocal individual. We all have different visions of what we want for the future, but my hope is there's a pretty common ground, set of common ground for what that looks like in this community. And it's part of what drew me here. And I think going back to basics here, if we just remember what you, I mean, it sounds a little bit cliche, but if we remember what unites us and what we're aiming for, I think we could steer through those more difficult, you know, shorter term decisions. But really, this is the same thing about climate change, the same thing about inequality, the same thing about our long-term water supply. why is, you know, we want to look out 100 years or more. You know, I have great respect for elected officials, including the seven I report to, who tend to make decisions that aren't just in their political lifetime. They're not thinking just the next 2 or 4 years. They're making decisions for far into the future. And I think that's what leadership is. And if it means taking some heat and having to, work through some challenges, that's what we signed up for.
Okay. Is there anything on your mind? I hate to say the word, but I think the word dominating the conversation. I don't know. Yeah. This isn't quite the same as with Tim, but then again, I'm not Tim. So you have
to. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, look, else. I mean, what's on your mind?
I think I reflect that. I had a couple of great conversations this morning with folks who have some great tenure in the community. Some of us were talking about housing. I was talking with Kellen at the Housing Solutions Network, who I know is listening. So, hi, Kellen. And just thinking about the future for housing and how democratic engagement works. So that's very much on my mind. I was talking to another individual I won't name, but he's well known in the community about a range of things, including water supply and housing and climate change. So I guess there's kind of a lot percolating up in me, Phil, but I think you're also in that category of stalwart residents who've been here for a while, have deeper roots than I do. I'm always interested in hearing your perspective. And I know that when we chatted before this, you are musing a little bit about interagency collaboration. So I'd love to hear what's on your mind there.
Well, really, on my mind is not a great deal other than knowing that the history, puzzling in a way, because I go back on that a little bit. We have not always been a democratic, as in political party, or left-leaning county, as we tend to be now. But still, even now, there can be conflicts between the city and the county. Different needs, different purposes, perhaps in some cases. Guess what I was thinking when I wrote that to you was, it seems like things are rather peaceful these days. I'm wondering maybe why that is. Perhaps COVID has drained the energy out of us. What are potential areas of concern between the city and the county, and how do you all go about trying to resolve them?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's where the magic happens. And I'm not trying to just polish this up. I mean, we have some heroic disagreements about things, but, you know, I'm just really grateful that everybody that I get to interact with, whether they be administrators or executive directors of some of the agencies or commissioners, they play a fair game. And actually, all the characters are likable and decent human beings. So I think, you know, at the core, disagreement is how we actually learn and innovate and assess our position. And I think I welcome that. I think that's what great civic dialogue's about is, you know, you gotta close your mouth once in a while and open up your ears so that you learn some and can refine your position. So, you know, I know we've taken on a lot of issues with county port PUD, you know, with a county in particular, you know, housing and homelessness is something we are tied, you know, bound to through an interlocal agreement and distribution of funds. We deal with decisions around transportation as early as this morning with some elected officials making decisions about where we're going with some transportation projects. Obviously, through the Intergovernmental Collaborative Group, I mean, that four-agency group really set the table for our community to really engage on what COVID recovery looks like. And you know, nothing like a crisis to not spark friction, but to bring people together out of urgency. And I said before, but, you know, we won an ICMA is my, you know, kind of professional body, the International City Managers Association. You know, we won a national award for that concept. So to me, that's validation that we're on the right track of banding together in this small county, this small community, where there's a lot of common ground, a lot of challenge, and we're clearly not going to make much headway if we all keep our heads down. So I'm really delighted by the spirit of collaboration that some of my colleagues at those agencies bring, and of course the community. I mean, people who are thinking about what we can do together, and not just opposing everything. I mean, you know, let's have a conversation. Let's have honest conversations. But I think let's talk about what the vision is, not what we're against. I think that's what can spark progress toward the future.
And by the way, I believe I neglected to mention at the outset that I am not Tim Quackenbush, who's not even here today. Tim Quackenbush may be listening to us somewhere far away. I don't know where Tim is, but Tim will be back next week. John, back to what we were talking about a moment ago, your meetings. Typically, how frequently do you meet with the county administrator these days?
Yeah, well, look, on the books, we meet every week. But I talk to Mark McCauley, who's the interim administrator, far more frequently than that. And I welcome that because he's a fantastic person and great to get along with. And we do a lot of work together. Same thing with the port and same thing with the PUD. So, as agencies, we sit down at least weekly to talk through collective challenges and opportunities. And of course, right now I know the port is doing interviews. And so my public works director is on that panel with the port right now, helping to do those interviews. And I'm on a panel for interviewing the county administrator, next week. So we do a lot of work together that isn't often seen in the public, but that is mutually beneficial. We share ideas. I think we do a good job communicating. We could always get better. I know I can. I've got a lot of blind spots, but the spirit of collaboration is strong.
John Morrow, I want to thank you for the conversation. We have exhausted our time here on this Thursday afternoon. Once again, you will have Tim to look at and listen to and respond to next Thursday. But I thank you for the conversation. It's been good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, Phil, thank you. Thank you for stepping in. It's always a pleasure to see you, and we should do it more often.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.